A divided OPEC meets in Vienna today.
The Saudis have grown pretty tired of shouldering more than their fair share of these cuts on their own.
And companies are quietly fixing accounting errors, all without alerting investors.
What we're seeing is there's an increasing trend for companies when they discover errors, rather than doing full restatements, to just revise the past numbers.
Plus, could more American troops be sent to the Middle East? This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a closer look at OPEC's meeting and what it could mean for how much we all pay at the pump, here's what you missed. We're reporting that the Trump administration is considering expanding the U.S. military presence in the Middle East. It's to counter the threat posed by Iran. U.S. officials told us the expansion could include dozens more ships, other military hardware, and as many as 14,000 additional troops. In a tweet, the Pentagon denied that troop figure. Officials told us that no decision has been made and that the president could approve a smaller deployment. He's expected to make a decision as soon as this month. Huawei is fighting back. We told you last week that the Chinese telecom giant is challenging a ruling by the Federal Communications Commission. The ruling from last month blocked rural U.S. wireless carriers from using an $8.5 billion a year fund to buy equipment from Huawei. Today, Huawei officially filed its lawsuit. Here's the company's chief legal officer, Song Luping, at a press conference at the company's headquarters this morning.
When passing this decision, the FCC did not offer Huawei to possess or verify the facts, but they very loudly and very publicly labeled our company as a national security threat. The FCC's order violates the Constitution, and we have no choice but to seek legal remedy.
The FCC had no comment. What's a rounding error? We report that more companies are quietly fixing accounting errors without reissuing financial statements, like Papa John's. Jean Eaglesham explains.
Papa John's found an accounting error that meant it affected its years of its balance sheet and earnings. But they decided that the error wasn't serious enough for them to have to warn investors and restate the numbers. The SEC questioned them why they thought the errors weren't so serious that they had to restate the financial statements and alert investors. And Papa John's gave a very long explanation, detailed explanation, and the SEC has accepted that.
Jean says Papa John's isn't alone. A growing number of companies are just revising past numbers instead of restating earnings. She says it's not illegal. That's partially because the Securities and Exchange Commission doesn't have a hard and fast rule about what counts as a significant revision.
The SEC does police this. What's interesting is it doesn't question that many of these companies' decisions. So, and other research showed only about 4% of these, the SEC says, please explain why. I think the SEC, one concern they have is potentially if too many companies do big RA statements, it could sort of flood investors with information and it devalues them. So also, I think the SEC thinks companies have a degree of discretion over this. None of these are sort of hard and fast rules. So when is an error so significant that it warrants a big RA statement? That's something that's a matter of judgment.
The SEC and Papa John's declined to comment. Now, our main story this morning, OPEC. The oil cartel members and partners are all gathered in Vienna today for the start of a two-day meeting. It's a big moment. For the past few months, members have cut oil production, all in an effort to increase oil prices. Now the question is if they'll prolong those cuts or if they'll let them expire as planned in March. David Hadari is at the meeting in Vienna. So, David, walk me through the backdrop of these talks. What have we seen in terms of oil prices and oil production?
So the backdrop of this meeting is that over the past few years, OPEC and its allies have been implementing oil production cuts. This time around, there is an expected increase in supply in the first quarter of 2020, including but not limited to rising US shale production. And also there are fears about demand, not limited to uncertain economic data, in part linked to the US-China trade war. Oil prices over the past few days have risen on hopes that OPEC may deepen its cuts, but they are, historically speaking, relatively low. And one extra element of this OPEC meeting is that Saudi Aramco, the world's most profitable company, is going to be announcing its IPO price. And it's in the Saudis' best interest to support oil prices because, in some part, the success of the IPO is linked to stability of oil prices.
So who are the factions at this meeting?
The factions at this meeting fall into maybe three broad categories. You've got the Saudis, and it's in their best interests to support oil prices as much as possible. They've got the Aramco IPO to protect, and they've been over-complying with the cut quotas they agreed upon pretty much for most of the period of time this deal's been in place. You've got the Russians, who are the leaders of the Plus faction, in OPEC Plus, and they don't really want to cut for much longer, and they certainly don't really want to cut more deeply. They are working on concessions from the rest of OPEC Plus for their condensates. They've just launched an enormous new pipeline with China, and they basically want to produce as much as they can, but they see the benefit in supporting their Saudi allies. And then the third main faction is probably the under-complying OPEC nations, particularly the Iraqis and the Nigerians. When the Iraqi minister arrived in Vienna on Tuesday night, he was quite bullish about the idea of deeper cuts, even though Iraq hasn't been fully complying for most of the deal so far. So that's a little bit like saying, let's go to a more expensive restaurant, but the Saudis can pay.
Now, haven't we been reporting that instead of a cut, Saudi Arabia in the run-up to the meeting has been threatening to unleash even more oil? How does that factor into these discussions?
The Saudis have grown pretty tired of shouldering that more than their fair share of these cuts on their own. And in the days before this meeting, they've even threatened to do away with cuts, ramping up production and essentially crushing global oil prices. Some of the analysts I've spoken to have said that would be a moral victory for the Saudis. They don't necessarily think it's an option they'll seriously consider.
Okay, so the meeting concludes tomorrow. What are markets going to make of all of this?
There are three possible broad outcomes, for markets, at least, on Friday. Number one would be a bearish outcome, probably a rollover of just 3 months, taking that deal to June 2020. I don't think that would be enough to support oil prices right now, and nor does anybody else, it seems. A middle way option might be a six-month rollover with no deeper cuts. And even then, some of the people I've been speaking to don't think that would be enough. And then a sort of third basket of options, either extending by 12 months or deepening cuts. And the figure of 400,000 barrels a day extra has been touted. That would take cuts to 1.6 million barrels a day cut. Either of those last two options would probably be taken quite well by markets.
You can find all of our reporting on the OPEC meeting as it progresses up on WSJ.com. On to markets. We're going to focus on a particular type of stock today, value stocks. They tend to be confusingly undervalued. Formally, the definition is that they trade with a low price as a multiple of their book value. Now, the thing is, they may be unloved for a reason. They could have a lot of debt, for instance, or be in an unpopular sector. But historically, they've been the stocks that outperform over time. In fact, it's the investing strategy that helped make Warren Buffett rich. Recently, there's been a lot of debate about whether that's still true, or if the other category, growth stocks, are really a better bet. But the key thing we're looking at today is the relationship between value stocks and bonds. Paul Davies says that could tell us something interesting about how markets have changed.
So what's really interesting is the link over the past 10 years, which has gotten much tighter recently and people are paying much more attention to recently, the link between value stocks and what's going on in bond yields. And the simple version of this is when bond yields rise, particularly when longer-term bond yields rise relative to short-term yields, so 10-year rises more than 2-year, for example, value stocks suddenly perform much better.
Paul says there are a couple things that could be behind this. One is that a rise in the 10-year bond yield usually means investors are optimistic about the economy. That means that they could also think value stocks will be performing well down the line. Another has to do with factor investing. It's when you choose stocks in a portfolio based on certain factors, such as momentum or company size. It's become more popular, and Paul says that may be influencing these changes that we've seen.
So you combine all of these things and the way in which people are looking at markets sort of more holistically or as a whole. And what we're noticing is that price moves in different areas are becoming very closely linked. So when the yield curve steepens, value stocks suddenly outperform and growth stocks underperform and vice versa. And this kind of tells us something about how crowded markets have become, how trendy they've become, and how many people are doing very much the same sort of thing with their money, which could be dangerous.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. We've got a ton of companies reporting their earnings, including many names you might recognize. Dollar General and Kroger report today, as well as Ulta Beauty. We'll also get earnings from Tiffany. The jewelry company is being acquired by the French luxury conglomerate LVMH for over $16 billion. That stands to be LVMH's biggest acquisition ever. Finally, here's a job that sounds amazing. Professor to the stars. Anita Elbersee has built an academic career and a strong Instagram following studying the conditions that create the greatest success stories in sports and entertainment. At 38, she became one of the youngest women to earn tenure at Harvard Business School. Now she leads an executive course where Grammy winners and MVPs, think Karlie Kloss, Dwayne Wade, learn how to put their skills to use in the business world. She says the biggest thing that the stars who take her course tell her is that they wish executives would see them more like human beings. We're curious, which success story, whether it be a music album, a famous ad campaign, an unstoppable winning sports team, would you like to learn more about? You can tweet us at WSJ Podcasts or email us at whatsnews@wsj.com. Your comments might be used in follow-up reporting. That's What's News from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.